Thank you for downloading this edition of Analysis from the BBC. In this programme, Matthew Taylor looks at a surprising new influence on the politics of Britain's left.
In the last few months, I've received a couple of intriguing invitations. To a conference about business ethics organised by Roman Catholic bishops and featuring some of the country's most high-profile company bosses. To a seminar about politics and economics after the credit crunch, with a combination of influential Labour thinkers and Catholic theologians. There's a common set of ideas running through these events. It goes under the name Catholic Social Teaching, and some surprising people think its time has come.
When the music stops in autumn 2008, and it's almost epochal, the moments we're living through, necessarily you search for different traditions to reintroduce them, different bodies, frameworks, ideas.
That's John Cruddas, influential Labour MP, and the man charged by Ed Miliband with writing Labour's next manifesto. And, according to Catholic theologian Dr. Anna Rowlands, he's not the only politician taking an interest.
The excitement of being able to bring together people from across the political and economic spectrum to talk about these ideas is really, for me, about the renewal of politics and the need to conceive of the political in a much broader sense than we have done in recent times.
In the face of this interest in its ideas, the Catholic Church in Britain is facing some unaccustomed dilemmas. Professor Linda Woodhead is a sociologist of religion.
Roman Catholics in Britain, for very good reasons, have for centuries felt like a minority. They were a minority. Their stance, therefore, has tended to be either one of feeling beleaguered and often being extremely critical of wider non-Catholic society, or being very grateful for any opportunity to be much more established. So this is something really new.
I'm not so sure. This wouldn't be the first time we've heard opposition politicians indulge in philosophical speculation. The banks would do almost anything to improve their image. So is this something really new, or just a passing fashion? Perhaps there's a lesson from history. Today we face a fast-changing economy, a society under pressure, anti-capitalist sentiment moving from the margins to the mainstream. Time's not so very different from 1891, when modern Catholic social teaching emerged. Anna Rowlands.
Catholic social teaching was an attempt by the then Pope, Pope Leo XIII, to begin to find a new way of talking to the modern world about the great treasures of Christian political thought. And at that point, he was looking out his window and discovering the impact of industrialisation, the impact of growing liberalism, of new modes of capitalism. And he felt very strongly that he needed to move away from the very reactive stance that the previous popes immediately before him had taken, one really of fear and concern, into a more nuanced engagement with the challenges of the industrial modern age.
In writing his encyclical, Rerum Novarum, Pope Leo was drawing not only on biblical sources, but the ideas of Aristotle, as interpreted by medieval theologian St. Thomas Aquinas. The resulting doctrine is described by many Catholics as their gift to the world. Professor Linda Woodhead has led a government-funded £12 million research programme on religion and society. She thinks Catholic ideas are rooted in the ideal of social cohesion.
You can't forget its medieval basis. So it's tied up with a Catholic natural law, natural order approach, which assumes that there is a God-given order for things. There is a natural cohesion, a natural order. And originally, of course, that's a rather all things bright and beautiful, the rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate kind of view of things. So it's had to modernise that. In more equal democratic societies, it's had to modernise that. But that view that every individual has got their place in society, that it's all meant to cohere and that you've just got to play your role properly, I think that's the fundamental thing about Catholic social teaching. And when that gets expressed in terms of specific principles, it means that the stress is on balancing the common good, you know, the whole, that unity, that organic God-given order of things with the individual. And they're mutually constituted. So one should never overbalance the other. It's the me in we and the we in me. Once one starts to get out of kilter, the whole order starts to collapse and you have instead a disorder.
This idea of an old order having collapsed but a new one not yet emerging, it certainly chimes with the views of John Cruddas. He is a core member of Labour's top team. But he doesn't sound much like a politician spouting the conventional party line when he describes
a debate within all the political parties between a neoclassical, or what is described as a neoliberal or economic liberal framework, and a neo-Aristotelian one in terms of what it is to be human. And the different skirmishes within the political parties and the party management problems that parties have are because of fundamental different philosophies that lie behind different traditions within those parties. Now, I would say that, you know, each and every one of us search to live a good life, in that locked within us are certain capacities or capabilities that it is the role of politics or the polis to unleash or to allow to flourish through the role of politics and the intermediary institutions. Now, that is very different, fundamentally different, to the notion of the isolated economic transactor freed from a sense of obligation duty.
It's unusual to hear a party strategist talk about questions as fundamental as who we are as human beings. This surely implies a very different way of approaching politics. Theologian Anna Rowland sees such thinking as integral to Catholic social teaching.
The core permanent principles of Catholic social teaching are, first of all, human dignity. So the inalienable fundamental dignity of the human person, created in the image of God, created for relationship, and also, interestingly, created political in nature. So Catholic social teaching insists that we're not just social beings, we're inherently political beings. The second core principle is the common good. The third core principle is solidarity. And the fourth core principle is subsidiarity. Catholic social teaching doesn't rest at the level of principle only. What it seeks to do is say, this has to be incarnated, this has to be practiced into being. So anybody who's remaining simply at the level of principle is not actually living out Catholic social teaching. What somebody would need to say is, concretely, this is what it means in my context.
There's a host of church leaders, political thinkers, and community activists endeavouring to incarnate these principles into practice. Labour in opposition wants both to distance itself from the past and to find a model of change for these times of austerity. Labour peer and leading intellectual Maurice Glassman, himself Jewish by background, thinks Catholic social teaching can provide some of the answers.
The previous Labour theory of change was you understood the direction of travel, you got the right people in, you pursued that. Unfortunately, what we confronted was that the teenage pregnancies remained, people remained fat, there still remained crime. So what this theory of change is about people owning and accepting the change. It's slightly slower in its conception of how to bring this about. It is about leadership from below and developing people coming through, a very big link with community organising. So the theory of change is that change has to be owned by more than one group. It's a theory of negotiated change that is genuinely pluralist, where that's understood by more than one partner, and where you have a balance of interests there to negotiate it.
So if you're in Athens, or you're in Madrid, or you're observing the riots that took place here, it feels like a dangerous moment. It feels this is a moment where the economy no longer gives people the goods, and so people increasingly question whether the system works for them at all. Mm-hmm. Does Catholic social teaching fill that vacuum?
Well, it certainly does, and it structures it. It doesn't just fill it. So there's a very important component, a very anti-revolutionary component in Catholic social thought. And the importance of stressing that is that one of the critiques of the previous 30 years is that you could have it all at essentially no cost, and that proved to be wrong. So there's a very strong stress on reciprocity. One hand washing the other is the way that the encyclicals put it.
Having emerged from my own time as a Downing Street policy advisor, rather disillusioned with Labour's model of top-down change, this mixture of new values and new methods is intriguing. Anna Rowland, though, cautions against reading off a particular political programme.
The job of Catholic social teaching is to talk about how things are. So in other words, it's more a diagnosis of the social conditions. And that is from the viewpoint of those four principles: human dignity, the common good, solidarity and subsidiarity. So it seeks to read the signs of the times, to use a biblical phrase. That means that the inherent dignity and vocation of business leaders, of politicians, that's where the field of action is. So Catholic social teaching doesn't try and colonise that space. It's not a sort of theological paternalism that seeks to do the job of politics and business leaders. What it seeks to do is offer a series of guiding principles against which you could test a political programme against which you could test your business practice, but it doesn't seek to legislate in detail for what those ought to be.
Indeed, Catholic social teaching has adherents far beyond Labour ranks. Philip Booth runs Thatcherite think tank, the Institute of Economic Affairs, and he's an outspoken critic of those who say Catholic social teaching belongs to the left.
The common good is about creating the conditions in which human flourishing for all is possible. Now, I certainly believe that that comes about in a free economy which is relatively unconstrained by the state. And when the church talks about social justice, it's not talking about equality, it's simply talking about the fact that there should be just relations between economic actors. The powerful shouldn't systematically exploit the weak, and those who have insufficient material things for human flourishing, they don't have the necessities, they should have those necessities provided for by the state, and so on. We can achieve all those things without the state spending anything like 50% of national income that it spends today.
While Catholic social teaching may be compatible with different views of the state and the market, its supporters do share a respect for traditions and long-standing institutions and a concern about the health of civil society. Labour's Maurice Glassman and John Cruddas are here competing in similar territory to that staked out by David Cameron's own response to these unsettled and austere times, the big society. It's not just in the realm of politics, however, that these ideas are moving up the agenda. Vincent Nichols is the Archbishop of Westminster and the head of the Catholic Church in England and Wales. It was he who inspired those meetings which brought together religious and corporate leaders to discuss the relevance of Catholic social teaching for business, including the banks.
The debate that we're having, particularly in the area of banking and business, does suggest that to try and create zones which are morally neutral or morally free in human affairs is a mistake. I think that's something which is being recognised now in the sphere of finance and the sphere of business, and I think sooner or later it will also be recognised in other areas. Again, it's the contrast between those who want to say values are entirely a personal choice, whether you're 14 or 16 or 60, and those who say, well, actually, there is a moral framework in which human beings prosper, and it has a kind of objectivity about it. And we flourish when we struggle to recognise that objectivity and shape ourselves according, to put it very simply, to the Maker's instructions.
Lachlan Hickey helped to organise that dialogue between church and business. As a partner at accountant KPMG, his specialism was a particularly tricky and controversial field, corporate tax policy.
This is very difficult in business when you're trying to do something which reorients the business, and sometimes not necessarily in its short-term best interest, but its long-term best interest. Now, my sense of what was right and wrong helped me do that, but what if I had had something that I could hold as a benchmark and say to others, look, I'm trying to do this because here is something which is recognised as the right thing to do, and here's my interpretation.
Do you think that the principles of Catholic social teaching can help us with a very concrete, controversial issue, like, for example, the responsibility that global companies have to pay tax in the countries in which they operate?
I do, and I would go beyond tax. So let's just take that as an example. You would say to yourself, OK, going through the principles, solidarity, am I seen to be acting alone for my own benefit, or am I actually contributing where I actually feel I'm getting benefit? Now, that doesn't say to someone, here's how much tax you pay in each country. It's for you to challenge yourself. In reality, business is given a license to operate by society. Society very often hasn't exercised that right because they don't feel they've given anything, but they have. There's an implicit license to operate. And when a company goes beyond its purpose or implied purpose, then society will react.
Some people will ask how this differs from the usual claims business make about their ethics. With a starting point of religious faith, the focus is on morality, not regulation. I asked Archbishop Nichols how he saw Catholic social teaching changing the way companies work.
What might develop is a change of culture, is a change of mindset among people who make concrete decisions, whether they're international accountants or whether they're members of boardrooms, that they can say, look, is this way of behaving, which is legitimate, is it actually serving the best interests of this company? Because the well-being of a society and the well-being of a company are intricately connected. And if a company, in the end, is not contributing, and there's a variety of ways in contributing, and paying tax is one among a variety, but if a company is eventually not contributing to the well-being of the society, then not only will the society suffer, but sooner or later the company will as well.
While Lachlan Hickey and Vincent Nichols hope Catholic social teaching can help businesses and business people regulate their own behaviour, there are others who think companies could do with a bit of prompting. Here again, Catholic social teaching seems to be a source of inspiration. Neil Jameson is the leader of Citizens UK, which trains and supports thousands of community-based activists.
It's the only example of the Christian denomination has taken things further than the Gospels, effectively. It's taken the Gospels, which are focused on the person and the human condition, and put it into a philosophy, a framework of behaviour, which those who have written the various encyclicals and guidance from the Catholic Church believe all countries should follow. The state should follow, the market should follow, and civil society needs to organise to ensure that they do. Organising gives people opportunities for joy, opportunities for personal development, opportunities for new relationships.
Because I've done my own form of political organisation, and I knock on doors and I hand out leaflets.
It's not joyful.
He's right. If faith really makes campaigning joyful, maybe we've found the answer to political apathy. It seems Catholic social teaching is being explored and applied by everyone from Labour strategists to global business leaders to street-level campaigners. The public is disengaged from party politics. It's tired of ritual adversarialism, mystified by the minutiae of policy debate. There's surely an opportunity here for a conversation about ourselves and our society, which is deeper and more fulfilling. Yet, as conservative Catholic Philip Booth argues, that conversation will also have to deal with issues that many, particularly on the left, find less comfortable. Here the focus is not corporate, but individual morality.
Pope Benedict has, through a series of sermons, talks, and particularly in his encyclical Caritas in Veritate, pointed out that it just does not make sense to think about social problems in relation to political economy, income distribution, poverty, and so on, separate from moral problems, what you might call life issues. Because if we don't protect the weakest and most vulnerable in our society, as Catholics would say, the unborn child in the womb, then it makes no sense at all to talk about redistributing income from somebody who is well off to somebody who is less well off.
These are the issues we more usually associate with the Catholic Church's interventions in politics. Abortion, euthanasia, gay marriage. And as Professor Linda Woodhead says, the Church deals with issues of social policy and individual conduct very differently.
There is a very big gulf between Catholic moral teaching about personal moral conduct and about social and economic moral conduct. We're talking about social and economic moral conduct, and that's what Catholic social teaching is about. And in relation to that, it's rather broad and open, and it allows for a lot of room for conscience and for reflection on the part of the actor about the proper course of things. But when you come to Catholic teaching on personal life and issues of sexuality and sexual and personal moral conduct, then the tone changes completely, and then you have a black and white rule book.
Does the Church's resolute adherence to rules relating to individual morality put off Labour's Maurice Glassman? Catholics often refer to their teaching as a gift, so I asked him whether Labour could be accused of playing fast and loose with religious principles.
Maurice, I see a real contradiction here, which is that you talk about respect for institutions and for the culture of those institutions and the meaning of those institutions. And when you talk about the Catholic gift, what you're doing is you're taking that gift and you're saying, we'll have these bits, we'll chuck in the other bits in the bin because we're not really interested in them. Now, that's not what you do with a gift.
No, I'm just saying that there's a particular concept of gift within the Church. So when you receive a gift, I wouldn't dream of giving half the gift back, but you put the gift among other possessions that you have. It's a gift that's decontextualised, if you like, from its institutional origins. So when you receive a gift, you put it up with your CDs and your books, or in my case, socialist history and my other things, and it forms part of a distinctive and a different kind of whole.
The question of how Catholics should respond to people choosing aspects of the Church's doctrine to fit their own needs raises both philosophical and tactical questions. Anna Rowlands has held discussions with politicians from all parties. I asked her how she could guard against what sounds like a rather pick-and-mix or instrumental approach.
Well, fundamentally, you can't guard against it. You can say very clearly that you will resist that instrumentalisation and that that is not the spirit of Catholic social teaching at all. And in a sense, what you do is you sell yourself short. You don't actually get Catholic social teaching if what you're doing is instrumentalising it to other ends. All you get is a label or a brand that you're using. So there's no point in instrumentalising it because you don't get the thing you're actually looking for, and therefore, in the end, you shortchange yourself.
That's not, I sense, what John Crudas has in mind. Although he chooses his words carefully, as a Catholic himself, he recognises that an engagement with social teaching will have to be respectful of where the Church as a whole is coming from.
I would see it as rebuilding a plural architecture within a political party that allows for different legitimate contributions, which is built around a courtesy and respect for those different traditions, rather than a brutal war of position within those parties. So therefore, those traditions that have been exiled are back in play. They should be acknowledged as legitimate ones. Conversely, those traditions that are re-entering shouldn't be seeking a sort of slam dunk in terms of control and definitive moralising of the party agenda. It's a modern plural democratic party that we're searching to establish.
Crudas's plural architecture may have to allow for difficult debates about individual morality. Neil Jameson from Citizens UK finds grassroots Catholic activists adopting a different tactic in their community campaigning. They simply avoid difficult issues altogether.
There has to be a pragmatism about politics which allows groups like Citizens UK to go forward. And part of the pragmatism is there's a variety of stuff you have to leave at the door when you join an organisation. And a lot of that is about personal morality. Citizens UK takes no particular position on personal morality. It does take a position on corporate morality, effectively the behaviour of the markets particularly. And that understanding has worked well. The issue of abortion, for instance, has never come up in the 23 years of me organising. The panic of groups that won't join us who have an issue about abortion is, yes, but what if the Catholics raise abortion? They never have.
The Roman Catholic Church in England faces an old dilemma. But with Catholic social teaching having an unprecedented opportunity for influence, this time the stakes are higher. To grasp that opportunity, the Church will have to work with those who are opposed to some of its most high-profile moral stances. Professor Linda Woodhead sympathises.
Well, it is new for the Catholic Church in this country to be in a position of centre stage, being asked for their guidance on these issues, because that's the Church of England's role, that's the national church's role. So for one thing, it's a new and slightly uncomfortable role. I think there's also a sense, Catholics still have a sense, not quite so much of feeling beleaguered, but probably justifiably, of thinking that they get so much flack for their unpopular teachings about contraception and so on, that anything they say is just going to bring down more trouble on their heads. So, you know, best to keep your head below the parapet.
This certainly seems to be a view shared by Archbishop Vincent Nichols. I asked him how he'd feel if party leaders started quoting Catholic social teaching.
I'd probably think it's opening up a hornet's nest, actually, but I think it's probably unlikely because the political reality of this country and the social reality isn't that sympathetic to the Catholic label, and I don't think that's going to change in a year. But what comforts me is that what we want to put forward is Catholic because it's true. It's not true because it's Catholic. It's the truth of it that is very important and has to underpin so much of our effort.
It's no surprise that Vincent Nichols sees the strength of the Church lying in religious conviction, not political popularity. He and his bishop colleagues work primarily through the Church, and they're answerable to a conservative Vatican. This is a very different context to lay Catholics working in business or campaigning for Citizens UK. They have to build coalitions and make compromises if their ideas are to have any traction in a messy, real world. The question of how to interpret and apply Catholic social teaching plays into growing institutional tensions in the Church itself. Professor Linda Woodhead.
They're going through a very uncomfortable process, particularly uncomfortable for the Catholic Church, of semi-democratisation in their own institutions, i.e. the clergy ceding much more control to lay people, to the ordinary rank and file. And of course, the ordinary rank and file aren't like in the 50s. These are now highly educated people in positions of great power and responsibility in society who often really want to work on behalf of the church. But the clergy have still got their very traditional role of being the leaders. So how do they let the lay people help them develop Catholic social teaching, for example, or reform businesses or whatever, and not cede their own authority? And that's a really tricky institutional problem, which I think is also leading to a great reticence about how far they're going to really grasp this opportunity.
Catholic social teaching is a doctrine well suited to today's quest for more ethical businesses, a less overbearing state, and a more vibrant and cohesive civil society. Whatever one's stance on issues like abortion, and there are ethical arguments both ways, the fact that engaging with Catholic social teaching opens up issues of individual morality, as well as those of corporate responsibility, may be a strength, not a weakness. John Cruddas MP sees issues being raised that conventional politics tends to ignore.
It does emphasise that you cannot park the way you live at the door of your office or your business. It has to be mainlined into all aspects of your civic duties, actually. And that includes patterns of employment. That includes the way you contribute in terms of your capacity to contribute, in terms of the obligations as a citizen, in terms of taxation, the environment included. I mean, there's a whole series of public policy outcomes which are front and centre in this discussion. Now, I personally find that enriching, and I think it throws up all sorts of challenges. And the question is the political class capable of stepping up, or are they so embedded within this orthodoxy, the transactor orthodoxy, the neoliberalism, that they cannot get out from under? And that seems to me to be the central political question of our time, actually.
So does this mean, for example, that we have to expect of our leaders a more profound ethical starting point?
Yeah, I see them in different parties, actually. It's going to be uncomfortable, difficult, but it means that we have to focus in on almost transcending the formal architecture of politics in the national good, actually.
The Roman Catholic Church in Britain is still in decline. It's been mired in scandal, and many non-believers are deeply hostile to its message. We live in a secular society. John Cruddas reports to an avowedly atheist party leader. Surely the odds are stacked against the enthusiasm for Catholic social teaching being more than an intellectual fad, typical of the promiscuity of opposition parties as they cast around for new ideas. So will this go anywhere? Perhaps the answer lies as much in the diffidence of the church hierarchy as the inhibitions of the political class. Ultimately, the power of ideas depends on their relevance to what's happening in the world. Today, as in 1891, a fear hovers over society. Will we be able to adapt to profound change without dangerous upheaval? Catholic social teaching may not provide easy or even practical answers, but it does seem to be grappling with the right questions.
Thank you for downloading that edition of Analysis, presented by Matthew Taylor. The producer was Sue Davies. Next week on Analysis, Christopher de Belaigue travels to Egypt in an attempt to understand the political trends emerging from the Arab Spring, from Costa Salafis to the Muslim Brotherhood.